We'll open up the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Thursday, April 23rd. Senator Starr is in Washington, D.C., and Senator Berger is ill, so we're a short committee today, but we may be graced by the Senate President to help us move some of this stuff today. I think what we'll do is begin by opening a work session on Senate Bill 34. I just changed the number. We were going to work session as the President walks in. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 34, the original title tax to motor vehicle fuel, you have the dash one, then replaces the measure. It authorizes an increase in employer payroll tax for transit districts from 0.7% to 0.8% of wages paid. And you have a revenue impact statement on the dash one, and there's no fiscal impact.
Thank you. Again, colleagues, this is the permissive language for Lane County Transit and TriMet. For the business payroll tax, which is the first bill of the transportation package that will be moving, and I'm pleased that the Senate is moving the first piece of the transportation package. So, Senator Courtney, we have discussed this issue in the committee, so we're just now prepared to adopt the Dash 1 amendment and then a motion to send the bill to this Committee on Revenue. So, may I have a motion?
I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to the Senate Bill 34.
Senator Courtney has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 34. Any discussion? Any objection? One objection. One objection to the amendment, Senator George. Senator Courtney.
Move that we send the bill, Senate Bill 34, as amended with a due pass recommendation to the Revenue Committee, Senate Revenue Committee.
Senator Courtney has moved Senate Bill 34 as amended by the Dash 1 with a due pass recommendation to the Committee on Revenue. Discussion. Any objection?
Mr. Chair.
Senator George, objection. Hearing no one others, it is passed and the bill is on its way and you're on your way to do good work. Thank you,
Senator. How did you know, Mr. Chair, I was going to vote no? I was going to totally surprise you.
I have ESPN. Okay, let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 867. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 867 authorizes accountants licensed in other states to practice public accountancy in Oregon. You have the Dash 2 amendment from a proponent that provides technical changes for wording. It directs the board to investigate complaints by another state's accountancy board, and it places accountancy permit fees in statute at annual rates of $160 for initial application or renewal and $175 for business organization. You have a no revenue impact, and we have a fiscal impact statement.
Thank you, Mr. Stembridge. And we have not yet adopted the Dash 2, correct?
That's correct.
Let's ask Mr. Douglas, do you want to come up and talk on the Dash 2 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas, representing Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. With me today is Steve McConnell, CPA from the OSCPA Legislative Committee. We would urge the committee to adopt the Dash 2s and send this bill forward.
Okay, since you are an accountant, maybe you could just tell the committee briefly the substantive changes in the Dash 2.
Senator Metzger, members of the committee, the primary changes, for the record, my name is Stephen McConnell, and I am a practicing CPA. The primary changes in the Dash 2 are a clarification of the definition of substantial equivalency, which has to do with people who could practice in the state without licensure, and otherwise to put the fees in statute to make sure that the board was not adversely affected from a revenue standpoint.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Powell. Questions? Thank you. And Mr. Hearn, I know you wanted to testify, so please come forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gaffney. I'm the current chair of the board of accountancy for the state of Oregon. One quick comment. We only saw the fiscal impact report yesterday with respect to the bill, including the Dash 2 amendments. Actually, the most significant thing that Dash 2 amendments does is it's a fee increase. It looks benign, and it looks like it has a little revenue impact, but there's actually a very large shift in the incidence of fees caused by the Dash 2 and 867 as it was originally submitted. There was a negative revenue impact of $135,000 because out-of-state licensees are no longer required to pay a $100 fee for the annual permit. To correct that, the Dash 2 amendment, it had to have put the fees in statute, which we've never done before, but it needed to do that to correct the negative revenue impact, and it increases the fees on resident CPAs by approximately the same amount. And so we didn't want that to be lost on the committee. Our board is unanimously opposed to 867 as it was originally submitted. The Dash 2 amendments only make us more opposed to the bill.
Anything else? Okay. It would be my desire that now that we have balanced up the revenue, and I know Senator George always likes things in statute,
yes.
That we would move this bill forward, but I would need a motion on the Dash 2.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 867, dated April 15th.
Senator George has moved the Dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 867. Discussion? Objection. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 867 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved Senate Bill 867 as amended by the Dash 2 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And would you like to carry that bill, Senator George?
Sure.
I think you were partially helpful in making some of those changes.
He can talk about fees.
Okay. Well. Now we're going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 944 and ask Mr. Stembridge to comment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 944 creates, the original bill creates a Lane County Area Commission on Transportation. The Dash 1 amendment directs Lane County Governing Board to develop by September 30, 2010, a proposed charter for formation of a Lane County Area Commission on Transportation. It directs the Governing Board to submit the proposed charter to the Oregon Transportation Commission. It directs the Oregon Department of Transportation to provide staff support, and it directs Lane County Governing Board to report to the appropriate interim committee of the Legislative Assembly by October 31st, 2010. You have a no revenue impact statement on the Dash 1 and a minimal expenditure impact statement on the Dash 1.
Okay. And colleagues, if you remember, this bill came before us from folks in Lane County, some of our colleagues, and originally created a Commission on Transportation, and of course none of those are in statute, and but there was a general consensus that they need to talk more about how they can have a better voice in transportation decisions for their area. And thus the Dash 1 amendment, which, as the committee administrator pointed out, asked them to put together a proposal that they would then work on together and make a report on their progress. So I think that's a better approach to go, and I think it's very important, as we have talked about how good many of these areas commissions transportation are in advocating for their communities, and that they need to have that discussion and continue that for their own best interests, I think. So we have a Dash 1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 944, dated April 21st.
Senator George has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 944. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 944 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator George has moved Senate Bill 944 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator George.
I'm going to vote for the bill, but I'm also going to take a look at the Dash 1s and just make sure all my local government folks are okay with the idea, but it seems fine to me right now.
Absolutely. Any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered, we'll ask Senator Prozonsky to carry the bill. Okay. Let's see how we're doing here. Gone. If you're here for Senate Bill 961, we are still waiting a fiscal statement on that, so that bill will be carried over till Monday before we can finish that one. I think we'll briefly open a public hearing, work session on Senate Bill 607 for the purposes of Senator George to just introduce his amendment, and that is out, available. I assume people who are interested in that issue have received it, and I want people to have time to look at it and discuss it, so we're not going to be moving the bill. But I would like to have Senator George just go over the amendment since our hearing yesterday.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I took everybody's notes that we had from yesterday and tried to be aware of what everybody's concerns are. Spoke with legislative counsel about some of those concerns. Dash 3s, I think, reflect most of the testimony that we heard yesterday, although I know everybody just got... I try to get these as distributed as quickly as possible to everybody, and I apologize on how short notice this is. Couple issues in reflection on what the local government said. Obviously, we put a timeline in there. We then talk to legislative council about how the statute is crafted, and so I want to make it clear based off of what legislative council has told us, and of course the testimony we had from Department of Transportation yesterday, is that the way this is crafted, it does not create any new permits at the Department of Transportation. So there's no new permits created. There's no new additional transfer credits created. There's no new anything created as far as that. Creates a one-time, an opportunity for a property owner to not lose his non-conforming use if he can talk to a sign company or an owner of a permit and a relocation credit to relocate on his property within his or her property within a year. So we tried taking all those considerations from the billboard companies. In addition, we tightened up some of the language as it has to do with the description of what the sign is. It has to be erected within 1 year of the time the sign was removed. We also cleaned up the language as was suggested on the types of materials or construction to try to take care of some of those things. We made sure that this was only applied to those signs that the DOT has power over, and I think the City of Portland is probably going to make some comments on that for us today. And also, as it applies to the other bill that we passed out earlier, the Legislative Council is confident that this would not apply in the scenic byways, as you would have to go back to the Department of Transportation and that would not be allowed. So this bill would not apply to those signs in scenic byways. I think we tried to take care of everything that was brought up yesterday as much as possible, and also try to make sure we preserve the rights and the property rights of the sign companies so that no new rights were created. And so I'm going to be interested to see what folks say.
Okay. Mr. Barenberg, you want to come forward? And again, just so people understand, I'm not moving this bill today because the amendment is fresh. We still have one day left, which is a Monday. I want to make sure people have a chance to talk, evaluate this, to talk to folks. So we will not move this bill. I do want to just get information about this in terms of the technical nature of what this does and does not, and then make sure that the proponents and the opponents have an opportunity to talk about this and see what those impacts may or may not be. So, first of all, Mr. Barenberg, I know the local governments are not either proponents or opponents of the general agenda item, but you certainly are impacted by it, and that's why I'd like to get your thoughts.
Thank you, Chair Metzger and members of the committee. I briefly just had a conversation that I truncated as you pulled this up.
And state your name first.
I'm sorry. David Barenberg, City of Portland, with one of our city attorneys. And just the issue was whether using the language on line 7, the existing outdoor advertising sign, whether that brings in signs beyond that I think Senator George is intending to cover. And I know that Ledge Council thinks that putting it in that chapter of the ORS limits it to ODOT permitted signs. Our city attorney thinks that given that there's a statement in this chapter about nothing within the chapter preempts local law, that by then referencing the definition, that it potentially creates some confusion and would prefer language that would specify ODOT permitted existing outdoor signs or something to that nature, just so that there is no possible ambiguity in how some party at a later date could interpret and may
attempt to litigate. So that was just the specific technical drafting concern that I would like to raise before the committee, and I'm happy to answer any questions and happy to work with Senator George on the language.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Barber?
No, Mr. Chair, we talked about it in the hall and sat and talked with Lynch Council, and I appreciate you quickly calling your staff attorney, so I don't have any problem trying to accommodate that. That's what we're trying to get at. That's exactly what
Okay. Thank you. First of all, anybody else from local governments would like to comment on the amendment at this point? Okay. Okay. Anyone else would like to comment today on Senate Bill 607? Okay. And please look it over, have your discussions, and Senator George will continue to work with the local government folks on language.
Mr. Chair, I guess based off of what the City of Portland just told us, I guess we're going to go for another set of amendments. So everybody who has an interest in this, who still is not happy with these dash threes, contact me as soon as you can so we can try to hammer some of those issues out.
I want to stay down.
All right, and we will carry this bill over till Monday's committee meeting. So for now, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 607. Now, we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 101. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, this is the bill that has to do with greenhouse gases. You have the Dash 7 amendment. It's a consensus amendment that we've worked out. We do not have the fiscal impact on it yet, but it replaces the measure that establishes greenhouse gas emission standard of 1,100 pounds of carbon dioxide per megawatt hour of electrical generation. It authorizes the Public Utility Commission to modify that standard. It prohibits electrical suppliers from entering into long-term financial commitments unless the electricity acquired meets the standard, and it provides exceptions for unforeseen circumstances. It directs the PUC to estimate the rate impacts of compliance with greenhouse gas reduction goals.
Okay. What I'd like to do is ask a representative from PGE who has helped me work on this, Mr. Graney from the Department of Energy, and Mr. Sparling from the Public Utility Commission to go over the amendment and the changes that were made from the public testimony that we heard on the original bill, and we'll focus on those changes and why we made the change and what we did to do that. And if you can do that by walking it, addressing it at the Dash 7 as opposed to the original bill for when you reference page numbers, that would be helpful.
Sure. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Brendan McCarthy from PGE. The first significant change that you should look at is in Section 1, Sub 1B, on the first page, lines 11, 12, and 13, where we address the issue of extending long-term contracts, and there's a difficulty in ensuring that the emissions are not on one contract to another are not less than or greater than the previous contract. What we did was say that the expected emissions are substantially similar, and PGE is okay with that change.
I could just for the record, if you go a little bit more, not a lot, but a little bit more detail of what, when you say it's difficult to know and therefore we want to anticipate it, it just kind of gave an understanding of why that would be.
Yes, Chair Metzger. When we have a long-term contract, it's a contract for delivery of a certain amount of electricity at a certain time. It, generally speaking, comes from the resource that we have a contract with. However, if that resource goes offline, we get electricity from a power pool. And at that point in time, it becomes very difficult to actually determine what the emissions are associated with those electrons.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's go to the next change then. Sparling.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, my name is Lee Sparling. I'm director of the utility program at the Public Utility Commission. And I guess we're taking them one by one as we go.
That's good. I like the teamwork approach.
I'm not sure what's left for Mr. Graney.
That's okay.
The change I'll refer to has to do with language on page 3 in sections D and E. D starts on line 2, E on line 8. The issue here that we were dealing with had to do with this list of exceptions to the application of the emissions performance standard. And the concern that was raised was that if a utility got into a situation where a key component of a plant failed and it needed to be repaired in order to continue to provide reliable service to customers, that the companies did not want to get themselves in a position where they had to go to the Public Utility Commission to get some judgment as to whether it was okay to do that and not wind up being exposed to the emissions performance standard because it would be deemed as something that would extend the life of the plant and just keep making these plants live longer and longer and longer, which to many of the parties would have been at odds with the purpose of the bill. So what we did to solve that problem was first to add this provision E, which is new in this version, and this specifically exempts that kind of a situation from being subjected to the emissions performance standard, so that, again, if a plant suddenly goes out of service and needs to be repaired quickly in order to avoid running up large bills for replacement power, that they could do that without worrying about subsequent exposure to this emissions performance standard. We still have D in here. D is a kind of a catch-all provision that would pick up other circumstances where the company wants to make some modifications to the plant, which arguably might extend the life of the plant, and this allows a proceeding or a procedure to get or to have the commission make a determination as to whether it would fall under the requirements of the emission performance standard or would be exempted. And I think, and Mr. McCarthy can confirm or not, that this addresses the problem that PGE in particular was raising with the language in the previous amendments.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mike Graney from Department of Energy. I believe that most of the other changes were simply editorial and some corrections of issues, or corrections of wording and clarifications. One issue that I did want to mention, we had quite a bit of discussion about carbon sequestration, and there are two different regulatory structures set up in the bill to cover different issues. Those are the for siting of a carbon sequestration facility in sections 7 and 8, and then for issues related to subsurface issues for a carbon sequestration facility in section 10. I provided a memo to you and committee members explaining the interrelationship of those sections that I'd like included in the record, and I
have
additional copies if anybody likes those. Are there any others, Brendan?
Just, I would confirm what Director Green just said. It is the intent of Section 7 and 8 and Section 10 to work in concert together, to be complementary, to leverage off of the experience and expertise of the agencies involved. And they are not intended at all to be duplicative in any way.
Okay. And then, colleagues, Section 12 is my amendment that I had separate from the last time we heard this bill, which is to require the PUC to develop estimates of the rate impacts on ratepayers every 2 years, beginning in this current biennium, based on the legislation that we have to reduce greenhouse gases, so that there is some transparency to customers as to what these will be costing on a rolling basis, and I think that's a good thing. So, any questions of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Jordan.
I appreciate Section 12 being added to the amendments, but I want to ask, I don't quite understand the process. When PGE or another power company comes in to ask the PUC for authority, I guess, to sign a contract, do they have to get approval from the PUC to sign a long-term contract? Is that how that process works? Or can they sign long-term contracts without PUC approval?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, again, Lee Sparling from the PUC. The companies do not need authority to sign those long-term contracts. The commission's authority, for the most part, comes in at the point where the company wants to come in and reflect the costs of that in rates and get cost recovery from customers. At that point, the company would make that request, and the commission would make some judgment as to whether it was reasonable or not, based on whether the commission, based on the proceedings and testimony provided, had acted prudently in signing that contract. Now, what this bill does, I don't have the section number on the tip of my tongue, but it provides an opportunity for the company to come in advance and within 90 days get some commission decision as to whether or not the proposed contract or the proposed plant addition, whatever it might be, meets the requirements of the emissions performance standard. It wouldn't guarantee subsequent rate recovery or anything like that, but it would give the company the assurance that they're not going to get tripped up on this emissions performance standard.
Follow up, Mr. Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to get at is what the biggest fear, I think, as policymakers goes, was I can't tell you what the price of natural gas or price of wind energy, all these things depend on what their lifetime span is. And coal is obviously the most readily available domestic source of power that we have. And that, clearly this is aimed at coal. And so you could have, in 12 months from now, a situation where the cost of other energy sources are double or triple what they are now, but coal is still maintains a certain reasonable price. And it seems like to me, to be prudent, we need to have a situation where if there was a cost differential that's significant enough that the ratepayers be able to have a place where they can suspend this requirement, this green energy requirement, because the cost differential is so significant in the contract that a power supplier may enter into, because there may not be any other options that are reasonable other than a coal-fired plant.
Chairman Metzger, Senator George, there is a provision in the bill that allows the commission to make exceptions if necessary for purposes of maintaining reliable service or to meet emergency circumstances. But if it were simply a matter of cost, there is no off-ramp such as that in the bill at this point. One thing I would like to make clear is that when we go through our planning process now, we're not simply looking at the cost of coal today. We're looking at what the cost of coal may be well into the future, and frankly, that recognizes the fact that there's a high likelihood of some kind of carbon regulation in the future, so that when we're looking at the kinds of commitments the company might make, we need to take into account the risk that if they commit to a coal plant or some other high emission resource at this point, that they might be subject to that kind of a cost, whether it's the cost of a carbon tax or buying allowances or whatever it might be, a cost that they might incur and need to pass on to customers. So the short answer to your question is that there really is no off-ramp for cost purposes like you're talking about here, and that's simply reflecting the judgment that many of the parties have reached in our planning processes and elsewhere, that at this point coal looks like a risky, expensive resource.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Senator, if I could add to that, Mike Rainey again. And while that is true, while we don't have a provision like we did in the renewable portfolio standard that has a specific cost cap, there is a section provision both for the investor-owned utilities in Section 4 and the consumer-owned utilities in Section 5. The provision in Section 4 is on page 8, line 12, that indicates in the event of significant financial harm that arises from unforeseen circumstances, then this obligation can be exempted. So there is an economic, a serious economic situation off-ramp.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
I appreciate that being there, because that's really my biggest concern is this entire movement. When I've looked at polling on energy, people care a great deal about carbon emissions and other things, but on the flip side, the number one energy concern of Americans, and it's the overwhelming political feeling, and if you look at what the president has said on energy, the number one objective has been energy independence. And that is the dominant political item used by all political parties. And so with that, it would seem to me that you could have political risk other ways, meaning importation of natural gas or LNG or other things. You could have a trade, free market trade backlash that would restrict or heavily tax LNG or coming in from Canada or from wherever, that could have the same exact impact. And I'm really concerned about the fact that we're locking ourselves in. I don't have a problem with giving the PUC some authority to try to reduce carbon emissions. I mean, I don't think that's a problem. But when you're talking about these kind of hardline, it's very concerning when the biggest political pressure is on energy independence.
Chair Metzger, Senator George, one other thing that we might want to consider is that this bill prohibits the acquisition of coal on a long-term basis, so for longer than 5 years. So to address a short-term issue where we know that, carbon regulation is coming, and we're, you know, this bill is really about, it's almost like a planning exercise. It's another layer to the planning that we do. And you know, so if we're looking out to the future, we know that carbon regulation is coming. We can actually continue to have coal in our portfolio, just not on a long-term contract. So perhaps that addresses your concern of using the most available resource.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman. Just one other thing I wanted to mention. This, in addition to the three of us who've agreed to these amendments, my understanding is that all the other parties who've been involved in this bill have are comfortable with these amendments as well. And I just wanted to publicly thank the chairman for your forbearance and patience. This is a very complicated area, and it took us a while to reach agreement, so appreciate that very much.
Well, and I appreciate all your work on it, and I am going to ask anybody else who wants to comment who's in the room after you're finished. And I do appreciate all your work on this. And, you know, Senator George, it's an interesting issue, and I think Mr. Sparling and Mr. McCarthy, you know, get to that. And I don't think there's any doubt that on a federal level we're going to see increasing regulation on carbon. And so then we look from the ratepayers' side, which is the side I usually come from, is I don't think any of the utilities would deliberately put themselves in a financial situation that they could not extract from and you and I would then pay for. But this is trying to have, like Brendan said, kind of a an exercise in that regard, in that at the end of the day, those types of restrictions, and if there were long-term contracts that would have to be eaten, it would be paid for most likely by us. And so at the same standpoint, it is a very reliable energy source, PGE's demand level, I'm just talking about PGE since Brendan's here, is higher than the generating facilities they have, so they got to keep that in that mix and be able to do that, but provide some assurance that as federal things change, that we're not locked into having to, you know, pay for things that cannot accommodate what might happen at a federal level. And, it's trying to find the right value of that. And that is one of the key reasons that I put in Section 12, because we also need to have that discussion as to the extent possible, is to let the public know that we have policy values and there's cost to policy values. And I never see anything wrong with transparency, because often that then fuels further discussions when those things can be weighed publicly and people know what the impacts are. And sometimes that brings people back to the table, both on a local level and a national level. And I think to the extent that we find that balance in trying to improve our atmosphere as well as the reliability of service and the cost of service, and try to keep that balance, as long as we continue to address all those things, I think it's a positive thing. Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much. Anybody else want to comment on 101-7? Please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Weiss, Northwest Energy Coalition. I've testified on this bill before. We represent a very large number of environmental groups that have been actively negotiating and working on this bill. We're very pleased with the negotiations that there was a lot of give and take, and we came out with a bill which we think is fair for all concerned. Just to address Senator George's concern, as Mr. Graney said, a utility in that kind of situation where it suddenly saw prices change could sign as long as a 4-year, 11-month contract. They could go short term without having the standard applied to them, so they could get through a period. This is a long-range planning goal. We want to give the signal to developers of new coal plants that there's going to be not too many people interested in buying your product. And so that's the main goal, is in the long run. But in the short term, there is significant latitude for the utilities to get the best deal for customers.
Thank you, and we really support the bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeff Bissonnette with the Citizens Utility Board. I just wanted to come up and say we support the Dash 7 amendments. Thank you also from us for your willingness to let the parties negotiate and finish out those negotiations. And we're supportive of Senate Bill 101. I encourage you to pass it to the Senate floor. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Tom O'Connor with Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association, we too support the Dash 7 amendments. Appreciate the work of all the folks that put in time on this, and this is something that's workable for us. The standard would certainly apply to any new contracts that we were to enter into if we were to long-term contracts. It does exempt our purchases from the Bonneville Power Administration. So this is a workable thing for us, and we're comfortable with it.
Okay, questions? Thank you all. Anyone else would like to testify on Senate Bill 101? The process of this bill is we cannot move this bill takes. We don't have the revenue and fiscal statement. So I'm going to close the... we're going to carry this bill over to Monday. So I'm going to close the work session on 101, and that would mean, members, that Monday we have three bills remaining from the Senate to complete our work. That would be this bill, the discussion on the outdoor advertising signs, and then the relating to vehicles bill, which has the Wonderland plates and the dismantler. Again, waiting to finish the fiscal on that. So I really appreciate the diligence of the committee. We have been right on schedule, thanks to Mr. Stembridge and his leadership and the rest of the staff, working with our partners in fiscal and revenue to move these things along and not throw them 9 million bills in the last few days.
Legislative Council.
Legislative Council. I know they appreciate the workmanlike schedule you have all helped with so that we're not running to the deadline pulling our hair out, which if we have some of us have less than we did before. So we'll be gone till Monday. And have some fun time in your office. We're adjourned.